At the 29th Pensic War, I had the great honor to tell a tale at the fire of Duke Sir Caradoc of the Bow. And I told him the tale of Lady Judith, how she slew the heathen hound Holofernes, and, under God's direction, led her people to victory over the Assyrians. And for this tale well told, his grace gifted me with a heavy silver bracelet, this, that I wear even now. And I stayed until the fires burned into ember, telling tales and singing songs, until I grew weary, and then taking my leave, I began the climb up the long steep side of Runestone Hill, thence to cross the Serengeti to mine uncle's encampment where I lodged. And as I began the climb up the long steep side of Runestone Hill, my heart filled with joy at the honor done to me and pride in the gift, and I admired the glint of the starlight on the heavy silver bracelet. And I reaped the reward of those who do not watch where they step. And I stumbled, and would have fallen. Two strong hands reached out of the darkness, lifted me to my feet, and steadied me. And I looked up to thank my benefactor and saw the most beautiful man I have ever beheld. Black was his hair as the raven's wing, as soft and curly as a lamb's wool, his eyes blue as the autumn sky. And he was of Ireland, my country, for he wore the lena of the Irish, of royal purple silk it was, with 7 rows of gold embroidered upon the hem, and 7 rows of silver upon the seams, and 7 rows of crimson upon the cuffs. And he was noble, too, for upon his head he wore the jeweled coronet of a duke, and around his neck the golden chain of fealty, and upon his waist the white belt of knighthood heavy with a jeweled sword, and upon his feet the spurs of a horseman. And when I was steady on my feet, he stepped back from me and bowed low. "Forgive me, good Magistra," he said, "that I have lain hands on you when it is not permitted to me. And for my temerity in touching you before the appointed time, I will pay you the forfeit of 7 answers to 7 questions." "Nay, gracious Duke," I said, "do not beg my pardon. It was I who looked not where I stepped, I who stumbled in the dark, I who would have fallen had you not caught me. You owe me nothing. I owe you my thanks." "Not so," said he, "for it is decreed by the King of High Kings that I may lay hands on none of the children of God until such time that he appoints, lest I pay a forfeit of 7 answers to 7 questions." Gentle his voice, soft and low, but hard as adamant, and I knew he would not be moved. "Then tell me this, gracious Duke," I said, "and this shall be my first question. Who are you, that you may lay hands on none of the children of God until such time as the High King appoints, lest you pay a forfeit of 7 answers to 7 questions?" "Not difficult that," said he. "I am he who racks the earth in the kingdom of the West. He who turns mountains to molten fire in Antir, in the barony of the western seas, and in Sicilia. I am he who drives the blizzard winds of the Middle Kingdom, and rides the wild storms of Anstaeora and Trimeris. I am he who walked with the first of men and first of women into exile. He who wrestled with Jacob upon the mountain. He who passed over the cradles of the Hebrews to ravage the nurseries of the Egyptians. For I am Azrael, the angel of death. Therefore, Fianna, Magistra of the Laurel, I may lay hands on none of the children of God until such time as the King of High Kings appoints, lest I pay a forfeit of 7 answers to 7 questions." "That was well asked, beloved of God, and that is my first answer." "Then tell me this, Azrael, angel of death," I said, "and this shall be my second question. Why do you wear upon your head the jeweled coronet of a duke, and around your neck the golden chain of fealty, and about your waist the white belt of knighthood heavy with a jeweled sword, and upon your feet the spurs of a horseman? Not difficult, that, said he. I am of the first and most royal of bloodlines, and rank above the monarchs of earth, yet I am myself no king. Rather, I am bound by righteousness and my oath to the King of High Kings, and I fought at his side when the best and brightest of us forsook his oath and rebelled. And I was accounted among the High King's champions, with Machael, the demon slayer, with Raphael, the journeymaker, with Gabriel, the newsbringer, and with Ariel, who was accounted the High King's lion. And therefore, Fianna, maker of songs, I wear upon my head the jeweled coronet of a duke, and around my neck the golden chain of fealty, and upon my waist the white belt of knighthood heavy with a jeweled sword, and upon my feet the spurs of a horseman. That was well asked, beloved of God, and that is my second answer. Then tell me this, Azrael, angel of death, I said, and this shall be my third question. Do you only walk the earth to seek those children of God who are to die? Not difficult, that, said he. I rack the earth in the kingdom of the west, and turn the mountains to molten fire in Antir, in the barony of the western seas, and in Sicilia. I drive the blizzard winds of the middle kingdom, and ride the wild storms of Ansteora and Trimeris. But I only walk among the children of God when the King of High Kings summons one to himself. I came for Ossus the Just, and for Jafar the Brave, for Aislinn of blessed memory, for your uncle, safe back from crusade to die in his chair, as I come for all the children of God who have been born and must die. And therefore, Fianna, singer of truth, though I walk the earth for many purposes, I only walk among the children of God to seek those whom the High King has summoned. That was our last beloved of God, and that is my third answer. Then tell me this, Azrael, angel of death, I said, and this shall be my fourth question. On this ground there is no malice and no hurt. Battle, yes, but battle here is but sport, and death a brief rest upon the earth. What do you hear? Not difficult that, said he. Come, and you shall see. And he led me back down the long, steep side of Runestone Hill, past the dying embers of Duke Caryadoc's fire, and thence around the lake in the starlight, past the gentle whispers of lovers in the dark, past the drums that made dancers move with joy, past the passionate songs at the Eldamere fire, and around the lake, until we came to a small encampment that yet had a very large fire, and at the fire sat a knight. Of the blessed King Edward's kingdom I would make him, for his hair was as gold as the summer sunrise, and his eyes the blue sky of that sunrise. A handsome man, well made, not old nor yet young, but if the scattered bits of armor around the fire and the empty jugs were any indication, he was weary with fighting and drunk with mead. Beside him at the fire sat a Viking duke. Red was his hair as the flames he watched, and his eyes green as the summer leaves, and his face fiercer than the fire. And upon his head he wore the bronze coronet of a duke, and around his neck a great Thor's hammer wrought of silver, and around his waist a jeweled belt, and upon his feet boots of the finest fur. And between the Viking duke and the knight lay a naked sword. "Behold," said my companion, "on this ground there is malice, and there is hurt. Yonder English knight thinks to slay his wife, innocent though she is. This is not the High King's will. But should she fall, I must be here to guide her. And therefore, Fianna, weaver of words, I come to this ground where there is no malice, and there is no hurt, where battle is but sport, and death a prefrest upon the ground. That was well asked, beloved of God, and that is my fourth answer." And the Viking Duke was speaking to the English knight. "I tell you, I saw it. Right here, in this very encampment. Your lady wife, at a young squire. And she kissed him, and she embraced him, and she swore her eternal love to him." And looking up across the fire, he saw me and my companion at the gate. And he scowled. And he said, "Enemy of my soul, what do you hear?" "I have come to play Fifth Hell with you," said my companion. And the Viking Duke scowled again, and his face grew fiercer, and for a moment I thought he would reach for the naked sword that lay between him and the English knight. But he only said, "Set up the board, then." Beautiful that Fifth Hell set. Of ivory was its board wrought, set with amethyst and emerald. Beautiful, too, the pieces, one half gold set with rubies, and the other half silver set with sapphires. And as he lay his pieces upon the Fifth Hell board, my companion said, "Good Sir Knight, the hour is late, and you are weary with fighting and drunk with mead. Surely now is not the time to consider such things." "But I tell you I saw it," said the Viking Duke, and he moved his piece across the Fifth Hell board. "Right here, in this very encampment, your lady wife and a young squire." Beautiful he was, the lily and rose in his cheek, and gold was his hair, your lady wife and this young squire, and she kissed him, and she embraced him, and she swore her eternal love to him. "It may be so," said my companion, and he moved his piece across the Fifth Hell board. "But you have always known your wife to be good and true. Wait until morning and ask her and see what she says." "Bah," said the Viking Duke, and he moved his piece across the Fifth Hell board. "Why do you hesitate? I tell you I saw it. Your lady wife and a beautiful young squire. Gold was his hair and the lily and rose in his cheek. And right here in this very encampment, before your squires, before your household, before your king, she kissed him and she embraced him and she swore her eternal love to him." "It may be so," said my companion, and he moved his piece across the Fifth Hell board. "But all may not be as it seems." And I leaned down to my companion, as if I would advise him on the Fifth Hell game, and I put my lips to his ear, and spoke, so that none might hear but he alone. "Tell me this, Azrael, Angel of Death," I said, "and this shall be my fifth question. If the English knight is misled, and the Viking Duke mistaken, why do you not restrain him, or show him his error?" And my companion turned to me, and put his lips to my ear, and spoke, so that none might hear but I alone. "Not difficult that," said he. "When the King of High Kings made the first of men and the first of women, he gave them a great and terrible gift, that they might do as they willed, that they might choose to do good, or choose to do evil, that they might keep the law, or break it, that they might hurt, that they might help, or they might do nothing. And the King of High Kings saw that this gift was good, and he forbade that any of his house interfere with this gift, lest they incur his highest curse. And therefore, Fianna, seeker of knowledge, though I may argue, and I may counsel, I may not restrain this knight, nor show him his error, lest I incur the High King's curse. That was well asked, beloved of God, and that is my fifth answer. And the Viking Duke was speaking again, moving his piece across the fifth held board. I tell you, I saw it, your lady wife, and the beautiful young squire, for beautiful he was. Gold was his hair, and a lily and rose in his cheek. And right here, in this very encampment, before your squires, before your household, before your king, she kissed him and embraced him and swore her eternal love to him. And when she had done shaming you, she took him to lie in your bed. Where is my sword? Cried the English knight, leaping to his feet, throwing bits of armor hither and yon, searching for the sword that lay in plain sight between him and the Viking Duke. And there was murder in his eyes, and death in his face, and I leapt to my feet and spoke, heedless of who might hear. Tell me this, Azrael, angel of death, I said, and this shall be my sixth question. Where is the lady? Not difficult that, said he. She lies in yonder pavilion of crimson and white. And therefore, Fianna, doer of deeds, act as thou wilt. That was well asked, beloved of God, and that is my sixth answer. And I began to run toward the pavilion of crimson and white, just as the English knight lay hands upon his sword. He was a tall man and strong. And in the day, I could never have beaten him there. But the hour was late, and he was weary with fighting and drunk with mead, and I reached the tent, 2 steps before him, flung open one flap, and then the other, stepped inside, and saw that everything the Viking Duke had said was true. And the English knight was upon me, and there was murder in his eyes and death in his face, and I turned and pushed him away with all my might. And in the day, I could not have moved him. But the hour was late, and he was weary with fighting and drunk with mead, and he fell to his knees. And I turned back, and I said, Lady, come out, and bring with you the young squire who sleeps in your arms. Bewildered with sleep and waking, the lady came forth, hand in hand with her bedfellow. Beautiful he was. Gold was his hair, and the lily and rose in his cheek. And young, not above 4 winters, I would say, and the very picture of the English knight as a boy. And the English knight had struggled to his feet, and I turned to him and said, Behold, sir knight, she who has wronged you, and he whom she has wronged you with. And the knight fell to his knees again, weeping, begging his wife's pardon. Much to her confusion, for she was as ignorant of the accusation made of her as she was innocent of the crime. And then the English knight remembered how the Viking Duke had deceived him and leapt to his feet with a cry. But there was none of the fire but my companion, putting away the pieces of the fifth hell set. Come, Magistra, he said. The hour is late, and you are weary. I will see you safely home. And he led me back around the lake in the starlight, past the passionate songs of the Eldamere fire, past the drums that made dancers move with joy, past the gentle whispers of lovers in the dark, and the dying embers of Duke Caradoc's fire, and up the long, steep side of Runestone Hill, and thence across the Serengeti to mine uncle's encampment where we lodged. And as we began the climb up the long, steep side of Runestone Hill, I remembered that I had 1 question left to ask. Yet I did not know what I should ask, Should I ask of my own death? But no, I did not wish to know such a thing. Should I ask of the King of High Kings? But no, I have been taught of the King of High Kings since I was a child and knew the answer already to any question I might ask. But as we stood before mine uncle's gate in the torchlight, I knew what I should ask. And I turned to my companion and said, Tell me this, Azrael, Angel of Death, and this shall be my seventh question. When will you walk this ground again? Not difficult, that, said he, but the knowledge is sacred and secret. And though I may tell you in payment of the forfeit, it may not be given to any other. Say instead when you tell the tale, for I know you will tell the tale, that this ground is precious to the King of High Kings. For here you follow the precepts of his lawgivers, Moses and Mohammed, and the commands of his son, the great prince, most especially that you love and care for your neighbors. And more, you behave with kindness and courtesy, honor and generosity. And so long as you obey the precepts of his lawgivers, Moses and Mohammed, and the commands of the great prince, and behave with kindness and courtesy, honor and generosity, I will come here but seldom, and then, only for those whose bodies have grown so weary with age or with disease that they may no longer bear the greatness of their souls. And therefore, Fianna, teller of tales, look not for me, nor seek me out, for I come in the High King's time. That was well asked, beloved of God. But question me no more, for that is my seventh answer, and I have paid the forfeit. And leaning forward, he gave me the kiss of peace, as I supposed he might, having paid the forfeit already. And though I watched him most carefully, indeed I never took my eyes from him. I never saw him leave, yet he was gone.